Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, and here with me in the studio, Weasel Weez!
Yeah, boy!
Steven Weasel Hurley, help me do my thing here on NGSC Sports. Hey, we never stop. That's right, we're here to do any particular sport imaginable for you, but, well, at least that's what the website does, NGSCSports.com. Of course, we here on the Student of the Game focus primarily on the NFL because of football, dang it, you know, I'm just trying to tell you. Chris Rankin, our third, will be joining us a little later in the evening. He was predisposed again, you know, he's a firefighter trying to save the world, things like that, you know. I think actually he had a family engagement, so he will be joining us soon enough. I kind of wish we had him for this particular one, but who knows, maybe he'll be in time for it to talk. But, you know, I have a big ego, and I know that. But I usually, you know, there are other individuals who I fancy in the sports radio world. One of them happening to be Eric Kusilius of NBC Sports Radio. You listen to him in the morning on the local Orlando affiliate. And he came up with a very interesting concept. Now, Weasel, you know about this time of year, because there is no football, be it college or NFL, kind of knows people are trying to fill time and things like that, right? You know,
of course.
And this time of year is when they have the whole sports movie debate, huh? I got to give Eric Kusilius credit because he put a little spin on it. It's like he started talking about underrated sports movies. Now, I'm sure this conversation's been had, but in this instance, I like that kind of spin on it, you know, and you don't have to limit it to football movies, because if we limit it to football movies, anyone who's listened to this show or met me in person knows for a fact that if we're going underrated football movies. What am I going to say, Weasel? Tell the world.
Replacements?
The Replacements. Damn right. No one gives that movie any credit, and I don't get it.
It's a fun and entertaining movie. So.
Well, you know, and it's not completely far-fetched. I mean, at the time it came out, it had only precursed the 2010 lockout by a number of years. Now, granted, in the movie scenario, it was a strike, but details. What I'm trying to get to is this. Keanu Reeves, Biatchez, trying to tell you. Orlando Jones, Gene Hackman. Okay, there you go. And then they had Pat Summerall in it. I mean, sure, he was standing next to John Madden, but that's not Summerall's fault. Pat Summerall is awesome, and it's he's my favorite play-by-play guy I've ever listened to, so that's there it is for me, you know. But no, a fantastic movie, does not get enough credit for being just an all-around good time. You know, Rudy, lame. Okay, I want to hear it. Remember the Titans? Good, but cliche. Sorry, I would put that a little overrated. Remember Titans a little overrated, wouldn't you say, Weasel? Or
it's like one of those good movies. It's not one of those, you know.
Yeah.
It's like the number one, like, on everyone's list.
Far
but
from it.
It's,
well, actually, that's
definitely a decent movie.
It is on a lot of people's number one list. It shouldn't be, in my opinion. It's like, oh, look, it's, I mean, I don't know if it is a Disney movie, but if it isn't, it should be.
I'm pretty sure it's Disney.
Okay, well, there you go. So, but all that aside, you know, then when you kind of go outside the football realm, you got a very interesting array of sports, you know, obviously. But Eric Kusilius brought up a movie as being underrated. Later in the show, he mentioned Cool Runnings. I'm like, okay, put the pipe down.
Yeah, man.
He's good. Yeah. Hey, man, that's a good movie, but it's not the most underrated movie. If my island accent sucks, go ahead, tweet at me at the SOTG. I make fun of me if you want. It was really bad, actually. I have better accents I could pull from, but yeah, man, that was really horrible. Anyways, no, but what he did mention earlier in the show that got my attention was Miracle, the movie about the 1980 Olympic hockey team that upset the Soviets.
That is seen as one of the biggest upsets in sports history, possibly. It's based on the 1980 U.S. hockey team.
Correct. Very good, Weasel. Well played. And the thing about it, I mean, it was the whole Empire versus Resistance kind of Goliath and David whole thing. Set in the Cold War backing. I mean, dude, you couldn't write a book that had more stuff to get people involved in this game.
It's a pretty much, yeah, you have the Russian team who they've been playing with each other's team for years, mm-hmm. and stuff. You have all these experienced players.
Yeah.
And then you have, for the USA, you have these guys. I think pretty much all of them were like college kids.
Not pretty much. Definitely. All college kids.
And it's pretty amazing, and One interesting thing was that this was not the finals that had happened.
Correct.
It actually happened in the semifinals. So, but yeah, definitely one of those. If you want to know an underrated story, that's a great one to look at.
Well, yeah, and as far as movies go, it only made $65 million at the box office. For its time, that's not a lot, you know. It had no Academy love. Which, I'm sorry, but Kurt Russell as the coach, Herb Brooks, should have gotten at least a nod for a nominee, if not the award itself. But, you know, I'd have to do enough research to know what competed with it that year to really know if it's a ripoff or not. You know, you have some years where you have several great movies, and then some years where, you know, a mediocre movie can win just because it was the best out of that year's group. It is what it is. So I can't get into that. But I don't know that it's my favorite sports movie, but it's pretty close. Like, Weasel, I'm going to make you sweat. I'm going to pop quiz you. Miracle or Hoosiers? It's tough, ain't it?
It is tough. Hoosiers, of course, that's one of the classics. But,
that is required reading for any sports fan.
I like Miracle better. So.
Yeah, well, okay, there you go.
It's just the story is, it's, you know, it's an amazing story. It's like one of those true story type of things, because other movies you have for I got some that I listed that are based off of true stories, but mm-hmm. You have...
Right, because Miracle is totally fake.
Because the Replacements, I think, you know, would one. Basketball?
Weasel. Next.
That's underrated.
Anyway.
It's hilarious.
I think
Varsity Blues was, I think that was based on a true, maybe, no?
I don't know that, I don't think it was, but you still gave that movie a 10!
I was thinking, how can I add this? What would you rate it? 10! 10!
See, I knew you were going for it, so I wanted to help you out there. I got you.
And one that I like, watched as a kid and everything, and just one of those movies that you stick with you. Is the Pistol Pete Maravich story?
Yeah, Pistol, right? Yeah, that's you know, and what's funny about that is that was a made for TV movie. It definitely had elements of the cheese in it, but it wasn't bad.
And the quick thing, a little side note there, Pete Maravich, I think one of the records that won't be broken anytime soon or ever is. His with LSU averaging 44.3 points a game.
Yeah,
I think it was 3 years.
That ain't Will pulling a 100-point game out of his rear. No, no.
It's you average that in to get an idea of what that is. They also did not have a 3-point line back in his day. So he takes these long shots, and 3-pointers aren't being counted then. And so I just think that the cool thing is that if you have to average 15 threes a basketball game. In order to tie that.
To maintain the average, pretty much.
In every single game of the season.
what is it? Every so often you could miss one, but you need to work your butt off to get it back.
Exactly.
I hear that. Yeah. But you would need to go 14 games and then miss one and then keep it up or something like that. I'd have to do the math. I'm starting to do statistics in my head and it's not going well.
Yeah, it's just one of those underrated movies out there that, you know, it's good for kids to watch and everything.
Inspirational
kind of thing for for the little guy on the team. And props to the
dude without kids on the panel throwing that family angle in there. I dig that. Now, granted, you do have a lot of nieces and stuff. So, there you go. Yeah. You're not exactly null to the children factor. No, I got you. We're both digging Miracle. And there was something else that came up, too, that I thought was interesting. Bull Durham as a movie versus Major League. I didn't think it was close. I thought it was Major League all day. But
the thing is you have two different aims for the movie. One of them is a comedy. Hilarious.
They both have funny stuff in it. Let's be real. Yeah. You know.
And but Bull Durham is... is considered, you know, one of the top movies out there.
I mean, yeah, Bull Durham. People may argue that Bull Durham is actually Kevin Costner's best movie ahead of Field of Dreams, which I'm sorry, I think Field of Dreams is just a complete waste of time. But, you know, they built it. I came and now I'm pissed I'm here. I'm just saying. I don't know. I'll probably get some sort of hate mail for it at the SOTG. I'll take it like a man, whatever. at Weasel the SOTG. Tell him that he's better than me for liking Baldur. I don't know. Anyway, so I just want to touch on that real quick. You know, get that out the way. Because it's far less depressing than some of the topics we have to talk about today in free agency. First off, let's start with it. We meant to talk about it a little bit last week. Didn't come up. And I noticed that there's really not any resolution on him as yet. Of course, I'm referring to the SOTG Defensive Player of the Year, Justin Houston. That's right. He got Defensive Player of the Year because J.J. Watt got MVP. So, and I don't do two awards for one guy. Chris and Weasel did. I can't blame him because J.J. Watt. Okay, who's on the wall behind me?
J.J. Watt.
That's right. That's my fat head that Weasel got me for Christmas, and I'm giving you details on that because I know you can't see it because this is radio, not TV. So, with that in mind, Justin Houston, I mean, look, well, you go out and you tie the sack record in the single season. You're doing something, right? When you make multiple Pro Bowls, you make sense, and you're still getting notoriety while lining up on the same line with Tamba Hali. It's very interesting with the Chiefs' defense because they had a number of injuries and didn't miss a beat, and this guy is one of the reasons. Now, you said something to me before the show about his production compared to Tamba Hali, I thought was interesting. Walk me through that a little bit if you want, Weasel.
Well, the thing was about Justin Houston is that the guy each year had his sacks went up.
Right.
So you got 2011, he had 5.5, 10 sacks in 2012, 11 in 2013, and 22 in 2014. And compare that to Tamba Hali, I think he's beating him like in each year. And to think money, to think contracts, of course, you have Tamba Hali in 2011. He did sign a 5-year deal worth an average of $11.5 million. So this is about 5 years down the road, and this is Tully's last year, and most likely
last year in the contract.
In the contract, yeah.
It expires in 2016. He'll be a free agent. Whereas Houston this year will be a free agent. Something very interesting. Tamba Hali is 31, right?
Yep.
Justin Houston is a mere 26.
Correct. So, it's looking like the franchise, in order to franchise tag him, it's looking about to be about $13.1 million.
Because he's placed as an outside linebacker. Weasel, I think you're at that place where you don't tag him, you sign him, and get prepared to either tag or consider parting ways with Tamba Hali next year.
Yeah, the age is up there.
You know, 32, you can still do some stuff, but... Yeah, it's not an accident, I think. Father time is a factor for Justin Houston. He's entering his prime, and to pay the last year of Tamba Hali's contract being, it ain't cheap. You said he's, making an average of $11 million a year. The 11.9, call it $12 million he's due to make in 2015, or I should say the cap hit in 2015, isn't exactly quiet, but by the same token, I mean, I can't say that that's an unreasonable amount to pay for an elite duo this day and age in the NFL. I mean, I think that makes sense, right?
Yeah, I got you.
So, I feel like... Well, let's put it this way. The Chiefs have to concentrate on defense, right? Because what else are they going to do? So.
Maybe find a wide receiver.
That's certainly something we could discuss with Brandon Howard, who will be on later.
Yeah.
talking combine and things of that sort. And maybe Chiefs going for a wide receiver is a little something we can certainly bring up. But, I don't know. I feel like the Chiefs have to concentrate on defense to even be remotely competitive for playoff placement, let alone moving forward. So, I don't know. But, so I think we're both on the same page here that keeping Justin Houston aboard is a priority if you're the Chiefs. Maybe you franchise him for a year and then hit him with the big deal after that. But that's risky on both sides. You know, if you're Justin Houston, do you float the risk for injury for 1 year and hope to get the big cash, or do you press forward to get the big contract now? Thus is the nature of business in the NFL, I dare say, right? So I don't know. Anyways, moving forward with that, go ahead, Weasel.
One quick thing, guy that had 22 sacks also, and this was about 4 years ago, was...
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about J.J. Watt this year.
It was actually Jared Allen, who's now with the Bears.
Yes.
And, let's see, he is now 32, so about 4 years back, I mean, you put him at 28, and that's why, you know, Justin Houston, I mean, the guy's like right at about that time. He already is
hitting
up
the
to
prime, yes.
22 sacks at 26. Mm-hmm. Jared Allen did it at 28, so... it's like he's still got some mileage left on him.
Not just fuel in the tank, but premium Pro Bowl defensive team leading numbers right here. Yeah. I, you know, it's that simple. I mean, look, and you've heard me say before, I think linebacker is the most important position on a defensive field because you have to be able to do so much. You have to be able to cover, tackle, and read. You can't hide from tackling, like if you were a corner, for example. You know, that kind of thing. So, I don't know. Anyways, Justin Houston's awesome. Next question. Somebody else who started out big and then kind of fizzled up to this point in his career, I would cite one, the Giants, Jason Pierre-Paul. Now, Weasel, I don't know where you come out on this, and this is another one where I wish we had Chris here because he is the resident Giant fan. But he's at that crossroads too, where he either needs a deal. He's looking for a long term deal. What player isn't? But there's also talk of possibly franchising him as well.
Well, he did in 2013. He was played only about he started 6 games, but I guess he played 11. Injury history?
Not really much.
Okay. Because last year he did average 12.5 sacks, mm-hmm. and 2 years ago, 2 years previous, 6.5, and then 2011 he had 16.5. So, I guess with him it's just a matter of, you know, got to stay healthy.
Right. Keep in mind Justin Tuck taking some of the attention off of him earlier career. That's gone. You know, he doesn't have the same supporting cast that he had as a Ute. As one Vincent Gambini would say from My Cousin Vinny. But as a Ute, he was playing with Justin Tuck and Usi Omenyura as well. It's like, mm-hmm. I knew I was missing one. Yeah, but between the two of them, you know.
Pretty good line, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. And so now that he's, you know, starting to become the man and stuff, there have been some issues out there about his mentality. I mean, I don't know. But think about this, Weasel. If you were trying to get a hold of a Justin Houston, granted, we don't think the Chiefs are going to part with him. Could JPP be a poor man's option to kind of, if you're desperate for a pass rush, like say, you know, to throw somebody out there, if you're desperate for a pass rush, like, I don't know, let's say you're the Ravens and you're desperate to try to come up with an answer for T-Sizzle, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a fiscally sound way to do it.
It's just that
I don't think that I would do that in that case, but
who would you call the top three linebackers or defense ends in the NFL right now in free agency? Who would you say are the top three
in free agency? That's tough. Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, Justin Houston's the top guy.
That's one.
But I mean,
where would you put Pierre-Paul?
Amongst free agent guys is we were talking about him last week for the Panthers. No, we weren't. That was Greg Hart. I'm talking about Thomas Davis is somebody else who we would talk about of the Panthers as well.
Just the reason I brought that up was because that because there's not, you know,
a plethora.
Yes. There's not so many of those, you know, top grade pass rushers out there. So you're gonna be look at Jason Pierre-Paul being, I think, overpaid.
Yeah, so that's
it won't be
point.
Like a he's a. I mean, early on in his career, he was like a kind of an unknown, and he had a good line with him. But the thing was, is that he now is at the top of free agency. So it's not going to, I don't see it. He's going to be as a, he's not going to be a, like a deal, like a good bargain. I think he's going to get paid more than he should.
Mike Wallace for the Dolphins, for example, a few years back. And I would say this, if that's what you're facing, you may be better off going to the draft. I mean, the big story in the draft is Vic Beasley, the Clemson defensive end, who packed on 11 more pounds and still ran a 4.53 40-yard dash. That's absolutely ridiculous. You know, I mean, they're showing his vertical jump is 41 inches, broad jump at 10 feet. Normally, I don't care about that for linemen, but what that does show is explosiveness. Mm-hmm. You got this guy who's about 250 pounds, can cover the field quite quickly, and if he's blitzing, coming at you with that much speed, it's a heck of a block. You better have read that he's coming, or else you got a hell of a job ahead of you. I mean, I'll grant that, certainly. You know, but as defensive ends go, I've heard mixed bag about this class. Some say it's good, some say it's not, but I don't know. It's an interesting. It gets interesting when you get to that point. Is it worth overpaying a guy with, you know, where you know what you're getting, or going to the draft, saving a couple bucks maybe? I mean, obviously, that goes situation to situation. But let's just say, I don't know, you're the Raiders. Would it be more valuable to get the experience to help Khalil Mack, last year's rookie prospect that they picked up?
Well, I think one thing with the Raiders is that with free agency is that I think they have, what is it, 40 million? 50 million. So they could just wave around some money and then you'll have Pierre-Paul. What? Okay.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, but I hear what you're saying, but by the same token, the Raiders need so much. Is that really a smart approach? You know, do you build youth to try to ascend in the AFC West, which, let's be real, Alex Smith is aging, Peyton Manning is aging, Phillip Rivers is aging. Derek Carr could be a pretty good quarterback in this league. He's going into his second year. You're starting to build up guys around him. Hell, you get a decent running back. Maybe, I don't know, somebody of D'Angelo Williams caliber. We'll get into that in just a second. Boom. But I think if you're the Raiders, you want to definitely go for the draft here and avoid a guy who's had questions about his own confidence at times in his play. Throwing that out there. I'm just saying. That being said, if he's got a lot of cap room like that, something that might make sense if you're trying to upgrade your pass rush, if you're, let's just say, I don't know, picking a name, the New England Patriots, maybe JPP makes sense. I don't know. After the way he beat you in the second Super Bowl, you know, if you can't beat him, join him. That's kind of the Patriot way in certain elements. I'm not knocking it. I think it's awesome. I, you know. Excuse me. You know, maybe he ends up, not a Bronco because they have all sorts of cap problems, but I digress. Anyways, last guy I did want to talk about, D'Angelo Williams announced that the Panthers have told him that he will be released going into the coming season. First of all, Weasel, let me ask you, does that surprise you at all? Or
no, he's the guy last year, he played six games, and this is like just for last year, his injuries.
It's, right.
He had a thigh injury and an ankle injury and a broken hand, and the guy's right now he's 31 years old.
Correct.
So the guy's up there, and the thing is, his rushing averages and stuff, it's like, you know, 3.5 last year. He only had 62 of them because of the injuries.
Correct.
But
62 carries, you mean.
Yeah, and so he was, in 2013, 4.2, 4.3, and then in 2011, he had a high of 5.4. It's just that he would be a good guy that you just have to have, like, a 1-2 punch because he's up there in age.
So he should be in a committee system. Yeah,
pretty
gotcha.
Much like he was at Carolina because you had... I think Jonathan Stewart did, I think towards the end of the season, he actually you know, was a big part of Carolina making the playoffs.
Well, so was D'Angelo Williams. Let's be clear on that, too. And I think part of the thing that, kind of screwed him up was the departures of both Steve Smith and Brandon LaFell, that receiver core being virtually useless, except for the fact that
Kelvin Benjamin.
Thank you.
He showed some promise.
You beat me there. Yeah, they got, got Kelvin Benjamin.
He does have the, which they really need, of course, but he does have that number one wide receiver potential there. So
correct. And then, I mean, Greg Olsen. Other than that, what do you got? I mean, D'Angelo Williams being cut at 31. I'm not going to outright blame the departure of Steve Smith putting him in that position, but it certainly didn't help none. So I don't know. Well, he's been listening in here a little bit here. Let's go ahead and bring Chris, and he just jumped the board on the line here. So, Chris, man, let me swing it to you. D'Angelo Williams announces that the Panthers are going to release him. What's your thoughts on that real quick, bud?
Well, I mean, you got to look. The last two seasons that he was injured. So, I mean, he missed, I think, about 8 games this year with an injury. Last season, he missed quite a few. Yeah. He's getting up there in age. But, I mean, it's always it looks like the NFL is starting to get away from those speed backs, because that's what he was. I mean, him, Chris Johnson, they're those speed backs that can break away, and they're just get up there in age. They don't have the breakaway speed anymore. So I think the life of them, they want more of the workhorse, like the Marshawn Lynch type running backs that the league's trying to kind of go towards now.
Well, yeah, that's a good point, Chris. But I think it's less because of the need for speed, so to speak, and more that teams nowadays are demanding, not just, oh, it's a nice to have that you can block good. They're demanding as a prerequisite that running backs be able to block better. I mean, you know, I remember, I think this actually was before you joined the show, and one of the first times, the second time Weasel and I predict the Super Bowl winner was Joseph Addai being picked up the year before by the Colts in the draft, the best blocking back. And there he goes, making the difference, you know, overall. And I think, you know, like I say, you're right. They're going to move away from the scat back in the NFL, obviously. It's what we've seen. But overall, it's more to protect the quarterback, the big investment on the team, just as much as anything else. And, oh, by the way, left tackles better not be taking a pay cut because of that. I'm just saying. Weasel.
I'll just say a quick thing here. So, for D'Angelo Williams in week 13, 21 yards rushing, and in the next 4 weeks, 14, 15, 16, and 17, nothing. He was out. And so Jonathan Stewart, the thing about him,
yes,
85 yards, 155 yards, 75 yards, 122 yards, and in week 17, 49 yards. And
you're trying to show production here. I see where you're going.
He had 123, yes, and against Arizona, which they had actually a pretty good defense over there.
Okay, yeah, but that's when they were playing, like, you know, the guy who sells the hot dogs at quarterback because they had so many injuries. Let's keep that in perspective too, Chief.
Yeah, so D'Angelo Williams wasn't really there at the end of the season.
Right.
So
right, exactly.
That's why he's got the experience and stuff. I think he's the all-time leading rusher for the Panthers. But the thing is that he needs that other guy to compliment him. So
I don't know. Like we hinted at it before, maybe he'll be the next in the aged running back core of the Raiders. Who knows, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure Raider fans hope not, but I digress. So I see our guest for the Combine is going to be on the line here with us shortly. So I'm going to go ahead and jump to break so we can get to him. You are listening to the Student of the Game on NGSC Sports. We will be back with you very shortly. In the meantime, go ahead and check this out.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man.
See, I don't care who you are. If you're cocky like me and think that they're actually singing about you being the man, or if you just like that beat, that's a happy song. I don't care. I don't know. Maybe I'm the problem. It's just how I feel about it. That's where I'm at. I'm sorry. Anyways, this is Kyle Nash, the student of the game here on NGSC Sports, along with Weasel Weasel.
Yeah, boy.
Steve Weasel Hurley, and of course on the line with us, our third man, Mr. Chris Ranking. joining us as well. But that's not where it ends, folks. On the line with us, about ready to break down some serious schmack, the kind of knowledge that you dream professors have when you're paying for your education. And he's going to be with us for free, at least for right now. Hey, look, I'm working on advertisers, guys. I'm trying to tell you. Anyways, with that aside, we'll bring in the man himself, one of the sharpest draft minds I personally know, and genuine all-around excellent talent and human being, Mr. Brandon Howard. What's going on, B-How?
Nothing much, man. I appreciate the introduction you gave me there. So thank you so much.
You know, you're just my muse, man. We had this discussion about this time last year when we were talking about college payers being paid in that whole thing, man. I'm just saying. But, you know, we're supposed to get a combine in just a minute. But because you and I have this history about college players being paid and all that stuff, you actually had an opportunity during Super Bowl time to get a very, how you say, celebrity voice to chime in on the topic. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that? I think you know what I'm talking about there, B-How.
I think I do. I had the opportunity to speak with Richard Sherman during a press conference, and I asked him if college athletes actually had the time to capitalize on a college education, being that their time is limited, you know, with the practice schedule and things that they have. It's very difficult. And so he responded with a resounding no. You know, he really was not happy with the time that he had, you know, and what Andrew Luck went through as an engineering major. He said that those things are incredibly difficult. So it's a delicate balance to achieve, and a lot of things need to be done to kind of try to help these college athletes during the time that they're in school.
Well, you know, being married to an engineer, hearing that Andrew Luck was one, it kind of explains his, you know, little social awkward, like, nerdiness coming off. He's cool, don't get me wrong, but it explains a lot. I'm just saying. I don't know, man. So, you know, I just wanted to give you a chance to brag a little bit on the show. That's what I do for the guys that count. And, you know, it was relevant.
That. But it was an awesome experience. So, yeah, it was definitely a good time there and got a chance to do a lot of cool stuff.
Right on, my man. Right on. Well, okay. So, look, man, let's get to it, because as much as I let you brag, your knowledge will speak for yourself here, man. The Combine doing its thing here. I got to tell you, you know, this is why I go to people like you for the Combine. I am not draft savvy and draft smart. So I'm going to open it up real quick. I know I'm going to hear about Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. I know I'm going to hear about Vic Beasley and that absolute craziness that was his workout. We'll get into that a little bit later. I'm going to open it up. Give me who you think I should watch that we haven't heard much about yet.
Well, he's beginning to gain some traction here, and that's the offensive tackle out of Hobart, Ali Marpet. This kid has gone on. He's just had this meteoric rise, you know, to fame here. He's doing such a good job with capitalizing on each opportunity. He started at the Senior Bowl. He had a great week there, improved every single day. Then he goes over to the Combine and has the fastest 40 time out of all the linemen there, runs under 5 seconds. And he just, you know, he moved exceptionally well. So he's a guy that's going to go on to have a long NFL career. He's very strong at the point of attack, and he does a good job also of getting up into the second level and getting blocks up there. He doesn't whiff at all. His technique is solid blocking in the second level. So he's a guy that he can play in multiple schemes. And also there's a potential for him to kick inside the guard if you need a guy to do that. So he's going to have a long NFL career.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the kind of thing where the average NFL fan would see someone, a team pick a guy like that over, let's just say, a Winston or a Mariota, and wonder why. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact with this guy, you got a guaranteed 10-15 year top level player that can help protect a quarterback out of a stronger class, right? I mean, that's the play here, yes?
Absolutely. Now, you might have to spend a little bit of extra money because his head is huge, and you're going to have to buy something that is just like out of this world to cover that head of his. It is huge. It's astronomical. But I digress. He's an excellent player, and he's a fun guy to watch.
Hey, well, we on the Student of the Game are aware of people with billboard foreheads, like former Titan backup quarterback Rusty Smith, so we know exactly what you're talking about. You need to make special attributions to cover for that. But I'll put it this way. It sounds like this young man has a lot more potential than Rusty Smith. I'm just saying. Being third-string quarterback on the Titans should tell you plenty about that. I'm just trying to tell you, man. It's being prepared. They got millions of dollars in equipment managers. They can figure it out. I don't know.
One way or the other, they'll get it together.
Put in a call to Rydell. Let's get that right. Anyways, and not to mention, I dig that you went beef, by the way. Let me ask you this point blank then. We made the point. Titans, should they draft this young man or should they draft Mariota?
Well, this kid has a potential to be picked, later in the first round, the Titans, I don't think that they're going to pick Mariota. I really think that they are some way, somehow sold on Mettenberger. I don't know how, but they are. It seems like the Titans brass really committed to building around this kid. And I think what you're going to see the Titans do is trade down. So they're going to find a dancing partner here and try to get some extra picks.
Fair enough. And, of course, us being in Orlando, you yourself spending time in the South Florida area, we would be remiss if we did not bring up the concept of one Jameis Winston and the possibility of him arriving in Tampa Bay as a Buccaneer. Quickly, there's been nothing but good stuff in the news outlets about his performance, despite alleged things around his throwing shoulder.
Sure.
give us your take on that. Is it legit? Should the Bucs take him?
I believe so. They have the leadership in place to kind of mentor and bring a kid along like that, to make sure that they get the best out of him. They're not going to let this kid out of their sight if they are to make that investment. And I think he's willing to comply with that sort of thing as well. It was a different press conference than Johnny Manziel. I was one of those that was kind of duped by the Johnny Manziel press conference last year as well. I said, okay, well, he seems at least, somewhat contrite for the things that he's done. With Winston, it was totally different. It was genuine, and he seemed like, if he goes to Tampa Bay, I'm willing to be around a guy like Derek Brooks, who's a devout Christian and, wants to do whatever he can to put his arm around him and bring him along. So I can really see that situation working out. If I were with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I would have no reservations about picking this kid.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, he did seem to say the right things. I'll definitely give it all of that. Really quick, Chris, do you have anything for him, or should I keep rolling here?
No, I just want to get his take on though. It's like with the quarterbacks, this 40-yard dash. Sure. People are talking about, Winston didn't run a 40-yard dash, which you can't put in too much into the 40-yard dash anyway.
Sure.
But, his technique. I was looking at a film. His technique was awful during the 40-yard dash. I didn't know if you wanted if you could reiterate a little bit of that or
absolutely. Track and field is one of my things. That was my background. And it's all of the 40-yard dash is if you don't have your start correct, then that ruins everything. Additionally, the way Jameis Winston runs, he's putting a lot of stress just on the hamstring and. That's going to result in just a poor time. The heel to hamstring recovery motion is just not there. I think in-game speed is going to be a little bit better for a guy like Winston, where he's not so concerned about, his technique and things of that nature. He's just running. He's running for dear life. And that's when you're going to see Jameis Winston run the best that he possibly can. But, running in a straight line like that is going to result in a bad time. And that's not what he's known for anyway. He can move well enough to get out of the way, and that's essentially what you look for.
Yeah, fair enough, my man, fair enough. And, I did find interesting when we were mentioning the quarterback 40s isn't so much the quarterbacks themselves running it, but I got to get you to weigh in on Vic Beasley a little bit. Dude gains, 11 pounds and still rips off a 4.5-second 40. That's absolutely stupid. All his drills, he looked like a fantastic athlete. There's talk of him being a candidate for Defensive Rookie of the Year. Is it him outright? If you're trying to call it at this point, try to be reading tea leaves and all that, or is there somebody else who would compete with him for that stock?
Sure. I love Vic Beasley. You know, he showed you what he could do in the bowl game last year when he played Ohio State, and he put Braxton Miller on his back I don't know how many times.
Yes.
You know, so that guy, he can flat get after, and that's what Clemson let him do. They saw a guy that can get after a passer, and they turned him loose, and that's what good coaches do. On the flip side of that, you see a guy like Hunter out of LSU. When asked to, he can get after the quarterback. However, that's not the way that he was used this year. He was a constraint player. He was a guy that used to set the edge and turn plays inside. And that is unfortunately not what he's best at. So his film isn't going to measure up to a guy like Vic Beasley. But if you put him in the right situation, the production, I think, is going to kind of even itself out. And he's a guy that you can that can be in rookie of the year discussion once he gets put in the right situation.
Well, moreover, let's say a team in the NFC South drafts him, which as bad as that entire division was. I mean, hey, the way we put it on this show, the Kim Kardashian the Kardashian sisters of the NFL was the NFC South. There's a very high likelihood that you're going to be covering a talented tight end, whether it be, you know, Greg Olsen or Jimmy Graham, something like that going on there, too. These guys have to be capable of coverage as well. I see that here in Vic Beasley. You mentioned Hunter.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, I think that's something else that we definitely got to look at, which is why, you know, the speed of these guys is such a factor. So I'm just kind of making a statement there more than a point. But, you know, I'm going to ask about this, and I think you were there personally to see this. So I'll throw it to you. At the tight end spot, a name I hadn't really heard, and granted, I'm not the top college football guy on the planet, but Max Williams is the tight end. I watched his combine workout. I dug it like a shovel. I'm going to be watching him. Is this fool's gold? Am I getting fooled here, or does that dude had something for me?
Outstanding talent. However, what the general consensus is, and I happen to agree because I don't always agree with the general consensus, but this time around I do, is that he hasn't really developed his body, hasn't grown into his man body yet. You know, he actually right now looks like a college freshman or sophomore. You know, he's very lean, just not quite built yet, and he has room to grow. So the concern is that he's not going to be able to hold up right now as an inline blocker or lining him up in line. Just doesn't make sense right now, and he's not really the type of athlete that you want to line up outside either, you know, outside the numbers to get mismatches. Maybe if he can go up and get the ball, you know, when, you know, at the catch point sort of thing, you know, that's great. But he's not going to be able to separate from some of the smaller guys. And he's really some of the linebackers in the league. You know, he's not going to really be able to separate from either. So it's just a matter of him putting on an extra weight and being able to maintain the speed that he does have. I'm not sold on picking him, you know, too early,
right?
But you know, in the mid second round range, that's when I grab a guy like that.
So definitely not going to replace Vernon Davis in San Francisco. Got it.
Oh no. Definitely not. He doesn't have that type of athleticism, but he's a good player, has potential to be turned into a very good player.
Fantastic stuff, my man. You know, let me jump to something here, too, because Weez and I just happen to be talking about it. We saw a receiver core in Kansas City that got exactly zero touchdowns on the whole. That's right. J.J. Watt scored more touchdowns on offense than the entire Kansas City Chief wide receiver core. Go ahead, Weasel, say it.
What was it? J.J. Watt had 3 touchdowns, right?
On offense, that's correct.
Yeah.
Just on offense, by the way.
Pretty ridiculous.
So if I bring in the defensive touchdowns, they look even worse. That's kind of the point I think you're making. I dig that. But but you know, if you're the Chiefs, because I like what they, you know, with DeAnthony Thomas and Jamal Charles, that's all going to be great. And, you know, hopefully Jamal Charles doesn't, like, you know, disintegrate in the backfield or at least, you know, have his shoulders fall off from carrying this team for the past 2 seasons. You know, what looking at receiving options, if you were Kansas City, they should get who to build the next crop of wide receivers for their core?
Okay, people probably aren't going to like my answer to this, but you look at Andy Reid, and he's done an outstanding job bringing on guys that might have some character concerns and building them up. and kind of, you know, loving on those guys and giving them the confidence they need to go on throughout the career. And the guy that I'm going to name is Doyle Green Beckham. I think that if they're going to take a risk later on, you know, in the draft, maybe in the second round, because people are saying he, you know, Doyle Green Beckham is going to go top 25. I don't really see that happening. I kind of have a little bit of inside information on that. and a lot of people are saying that, you know, there's really not a chance, and it's not a smokescreen either. So if they don't want to spend a high pick on a receiver, they could probably wait till second round and grab a talent like Doyle Green Beckham.
Well, if
as a value guy,
if you're the Chiefs, where would you spend your high level draft pick ahead of Beckham?
Ahead of Beckham, let's see here. A guy like a Jalen Strong, probably.
There you go. Okay.
Now he has some work to do as far as his route running. He said he's working on that. I had a chance to ask him about that. Said that's the biggest thing that he's working on going into the next level, not tipping off his route, also getting in and out of his breaks that much more quickly. But you know, it's going to be a process. So that's something that he's working on, and I feel like if they're going to take a risk on a receiver and they let a guy like Dwayne Bowe, walk, Jalen Strong would be a very excellent replacement.
So, see, now granted, let's remind everybody that my point of view is, you know, beef. I'm an offensive lineman. It's what I do. So I don't normally think that a vertical jump or a broad jump translates directly to performance per se, except for maybe you can claim explosiveness. Okay, fine. But I'm sure by now you've heard of Byron Jones out of UConn doing his thing, practically setting a world record for the broad jump. Can you kind of explain what impact that could actually have for him as a corner slash potential, even a special teams player, if he can't break onto a roster early?
Yeah, I had the pleasure of speaking with Byron Jones prior to the combine, and caught up with him again at the combine. He's a great kid. As far as the broad jump is concerned, it just really just shows explosion. But I mean, there's really no, you know, functionality to that, you know, or that translates to, you know, the playing field. As far as the vertical jump is concerned, now that was absurd. what I saw there, I mean, he's jumping over basically a prepubescent kid, you know, if he needed to. I mean, that's just ridiculous. And that's the type of things people want to see, those type of metrics, that type of explosion. And, you know, what was his vertical, like 43 or something for that?
44.5.
44 and a half, weasels all over it.
That's ridiculous. So, you know, they want to see, because that definitely translates in the sense that, you know, if you got to go up and things, grab the ball, you know, and high point the football over, you know, these big physical wide receivers like Calvin Johnson and things like that. You know what? That's what they're looking for.
Weasel.
Well, I think there's a difference between like Calvin Johnson when I think that guy, I think he had what it was like a 42, 43 inch vertical and all, but the difference was Calvin Johnson, I think he's like, what is it, 6'5", 6'4"? Or something
about
like
a little over 6'5", or yeah, 6'5", about 6'5" on the diet.
I think talking with Kyle, there was
Jones, right?
His weight and height. I think he's what, six,
six
foot
one and six almost one, 200 pounds.
And yeah, so there's a difference in build there, but still is, you know, very right. impressive.
Absolutely, a difference in build, but at least it puts him in the ballpark. You see a guy like Brent Grimes, you know. What happened in that scenario when he's guarding Calvin Johnson? I mean, he's 5'9", you know.
Yeah.
so he goes up and he grabs the ball before Calvin Johnson can react to it, you know, because he has the ability to leap up in the air. I think Brent Grimes has something crazy, like a 42-inch vertical, you know. So those are the scenarios where, you know, a Byron Jones can impact the game.
About where was Byron projected? Like before, you know, all this, his ridiculous numbers, where was, give me like last week, where was he projected to be drafted? Do you have like an idea or?
How much did he jump?
Well, Byron Jones was actually prior to the shoulder injury gaining some momentum as a third round draft pick. He had the shoulder injury, so he was out for the remainder of the year, couldn't participate in the Senior Bowl and things like that. So, you know, his spot kind of was, you know, remained stagnant, and he really wasn't getting elevated anywhere. But he wanted a guarantee when deciding on an agent that he was going in the third round. So he's looking to go in the third round, and anything, you know, before that would be welcome. But I think third round is really kind of his slot.
There you go. So maybe he'll make first day, maybe not. It'll be very interesting to see.
Exactly.
So, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, yeah, they're having the draft in Chicago this year. So, hey, you know, you never I'm curious to see how that'll work out. But, you know, before we let you go, B-Hal, something else we were talking about earlier in the show, Weasel and I, at this time of year, you always seem to notice that they bring up sports movies and that whole debate comes up. I mean, hey, look, people got to fill time. That's what we've come up with here. But we were talking about the concept of the underrated sports movie. So if you could give us your most underrated sports movie. Now, granted, not the best one, not the greatest one, not required reading. What you think is the best sports movie that compared to the hype that it receives in the pop culture realm?
You know what? That's a tough one for me, man. I really... That's hard, man. because the one that I was gonna say the program, but that one gets a lot of acclaim. People love that movie, so
that's more.
That's a tough one.
I can get behind the program. Oh, Mike Tomlin in his first acting role before becoming the coach of the Pittsburgh. Damn it, that's ORS. I keep getting that wrong. It's like, you know, I mean. I always wondered if Mike Tomlin got enough money, why he got to be on House too, and then I keep remembering it's a different guy. I don't know, man. So no, it's always good to make the Mike Tomlin joke. Weasel shaking his head no over here. He's like, you did it again, Kyle. Why?
It's funny. It's funny. I get it.
Hey, you know, we're not afraid to make jokes on this show. I mean, first of all, we talk about billboard foreheads, then we're talking about Omar Epps. That's how we roll. I don't know. Anyways, man. So go ahead. Drop your information for us, Brandon Howard.
Oh, yeah. No problem. You can find me at Dash Diallo. That's DASHDIALLO and the number one on Twitter. And you can find my work also on Pro Player Insider and, of course, at NGN.
Absolutely. Well, the NGSC will be very glad to have you aboard kicking butt. Actually, we should be glad. But we have the Byron Jones interview, by the way, on the site there. You want to check that out, I believe. That's a good time all the way around. But yeah, man, look for more. I mean, definitely in our Draft Central page on NGSC Sports, you'll see a lot from Brandon Howard and all our draft crew. Man, great time as always. I don't know how it's going to work, but I can tell you what is going to work is you are going to be on the show again. I just haven't figured out how yet.
Absolutely. We'll definitely make it happen. I always got time for you guys.
All right, man. Hey, thanks a lot, Brandon. Appreciate you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brandon Howard, all around awesome guy, fantastic human being, and friend of the show. I think I can officially say that, right? Friend of the show.
Sure.
There
Sounds
you
good.
Go. So you got to have fun with that. In any case, man, you know, I like what he was saying all the way around about how I was a little intrigued that he said the Titans shouldn't go for. Or won't go for a quarterback. And yet, well, it was put in other such terms that it's because the Titans are dumb. To call it what it is.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this Titans quarterback, Zach Mettenberger.
Yeah.
So last year was the sixth round pick. And when he talked about the quarterbacks, you got Mariota and you got Winston. He said, if they were here, I think I would... say the same thing. If we had to compete out there, I think I'd beat him out. Yeah.
Of course, what's he supposed to say? Yeah, I suck. That guy's totally better than me. Yeah, I'm going to get owned.
Well. Still.
Look, whether that's supposed to happen or not, I mean, that's up there with, can you guarantee victory? No, you can't. No, you can't do that. That's...
It's like Hasselbeck, yeah.
Well, we're going to get the ball, and we're going to... Score! Woo! Oh, hell.
Oops.
No! Which, interestingly enough, was another Packers-Seahawks playoff game. Interesting, yes. By the way, the biggest jip with the MVP being Aaron Rodgers, the NFL Network is having Aaron Rodgers Week coming up on there. If they had properly voted J.J. Watt, the MVP. If they had J.J. Watt week, bro, you know my DVR would be going off. Just trying to tell you, man. So anyways, let's go ahead and wrap this up here, man. I know it's a little bit early, but how do you follow up Brandon Howard? You really can't. You just don't. All that other stuff. So for Chris Rankin, Steven Weasel Hurley, of course, I'm Kyle Nash, a student of the game. You can find me on NGSCSports.com, on Twitter, at the SOTG. Find Weasel at Weasel the SOTG. Find Chris at Rankin the SOTG. But until next time, everybody, always a good time. We'll see you next Monday. Until then, class dismissed.